You're listening to Tell Me Something Weird. This is a bi-weekly podcast.
Out of hiatus after 7 months.
In which I, Eric X. Johnson, tells a story about molasses.
I thought you were going to say molesting.
We'll see what happens. There's a lot of stuff about molasses. We'll see how far I get.
Okay.
To my co-host,
Jody Arnold, who's going to tell you a story about a murder that has incorrectly greatly influenced psychology textbooks in the study of the bystander syndrome.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Is it a Wisconsin murder?
No, it's not. I was going to do one, but this one has been on my mind. It's Kitty Genovese. Have you heard of that one?
Sounds familiar. I'm sure as we get into it, it'll jog my memory.
Yeah, I don't think you know about it.
Maybe not. So what have you been up to over the last 7 months?
Yeah, well, Tyler just sent me a message. Is Duke not... Oh my God. Well, after I go grocery shopping, it's Augusta Bean and Bacon Days this weekend.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And Tyler's got a friend who works there, and he said that he can get us a meet and greet with Jay and Duke Bush, the dog, who does those roll the beautiful bean footage.
Oh, I want to meet the dog.
So I think we're going to go and do that.
All right.
A personal, private meet and greet. I mean, what the fuck? Are they just like in a, like, are they just going to be surrounded with, maybe you get a free can of beans. I was on my shopping list to buy beans. I wonder if I should hold off.
We should. or would going and buying a can of Bush's Best, like, be.
I could bring one to get signed.
Oh, there you go. Will you sign my beans? Hi, Jake. Will you sign my beans?
And guess what else I learned? Beans are what's called the pads on a cat. I'm in the toe bean group on Facebook. And all it is pictures of cat's feet.
Is it like some kind of weird fetish?
Well, yeah, I mean,
group?
But people just think they're adorable. And the tops of cat's feet are called peats.
Peats and beans. I don't like any of this. None of this is feeling good.
And they had to just do a new message where it was like, everybody, this is just a group for toe beans. You can't just show us pictures of your cats. It has to, if your cat's in the picture, that's fine, but their beans have to be showing.
I'm not on board with any of this.
I mean, this is all... I have gotten a little weird with the cat stuff. I talked to him like this. Yeah, yeah, BB. And he's got little lips.
And are you taking bean pictures?
I tried once, but nobody seemed to think his were that great.
Whoa.
I was like sleepy beans. Because he lets you touch it. Kitty is very... I mean, when he's sleeping, you can kind of do whatever you want to him. I had a ninja mask on him one day.
You know, you fill his belly up with some food,
mm-hmm.
and like he'll just like as soon as if you can satisfy his food obsession for like 5 minutes, Like, you can do whatever in that 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he'll, yeah, you can dress him up. You can, yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else you would do.
Yeah.
He won't play with cat toys, that's for sure.
No, he doesn't really like to be picked up very much. And he's really quite heavy now, so it's... And then last night I had my legs on the coffee table and he was like laying on my legs and the weight of him, like me supporting him by having my feet on the coffee table and my legs were just hanging and it was on my legs and I was enduring it because it was so heavy, but he liked it so much. I was like, this is just,
I'm trying to wrap my mind around, my brain is not accepting this cat foot fetish group.
It's the Toe Bean channel.
I don't.
Yeah, Toe Bean, the Toe Bean channel. I'll just show you an example.
I don't want to see it.
Yeah,
but it's also.
See, like, here's a cat in motion with his. Like, let me out of here. Get me out of here.
Yeah, he's like, looks like he's scratching at a screen or something.
Yeah. You know, and like this one.
This is
a little sleeping cat.
This is real weird.
They're pinching.
It's not.
Itty bitty squishy beans.
I don't think this is cool. I don't think this is a cool thing to do to exploit cats in that way. I don't feel good about it. It doesn't feel good.
Well, anyway, that's what I'm doing. And yesterday we went to the bar.
Feels like real, like, voyeuristic, you know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. Like, I do think cat feet are cute and stuff like that, you know? And, like, they're kind of just so proper. And then some are, like, legs are real short, and then some legs are long. Yeah. But I went to the bar yesterday from Fargo went to a baby shower in Matometi, Minnesota. Matometi or Matometi. And like half a mile away was the bar where in the movie Fargo, they have that Frances McDormand, they go and interview those strippers. It's the Lakeside Club.
Oh, right on.
And they've got a thing here, Fargo Fascination. It was featured in the movie as a strip club, which it's not. And they were like, one of the bartenders, this lady, she's kind of this old, rough lady. She's like, I would have gotten my boobs out. Because I was like, how do you guys feel about it being a strip club when it's not? It's like an old... kind of supper club.
Yeah, like how many people are like super disappointed when they
walk
through the
door? Yeah, right. Yeah. And she was like, I got my boobs out if it would have helped anything.
Actually, now that you mention it, I mean, if you're offering.
I mean, this was kind of a rough situation.
Coming from the cat bean lady.
Well, these, you wouldn't want to see these boobs. Boob beans. That's what nipples are.
Jesus.
So what have you been doing?
So I've been...
plug your business here.
This episode of Tell Me Something Weird is brought to you by not just anybody's bikes and books.
And books. No longer Montucky Cold Snacks.
Yeah. we'll bring them back on board probably, you know. But
yeah, the guy had written me and was like, hey, I'll get you some beer. And then I was like, great, let me know. And that's where it's just...
All right. Yeah, he'll let you... Yeah.
That's behind the curtain.
So suppose you got a bike. And
I have my bike is here somewhere.
Yeah, it is.
Is it in the basement?
It's down in the basement hanging up in my... bikes.
I have to get that fixed.
Well,
I don't want it fitted.
So you've got a bike, and maybe it doesn't work quite the way that you want it to.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you're uncomfortable while you're riding,
and you're just out there, and you're just like, you know what? I am just not having my best ride, and I wish there was just somebody who could help. Well, now there is. You can go to eauclair.bike, schedule your appointment, or get an online estimate for free.
Tell them Eric sent you.
I mean, you will be telling Eric that Eric sent you, but...
And you'll save half off.
No, if you, right now, actually through the summer, if you book your appointment or get an estimate for a repair online, you will save 20% on the service. So, go to eauclair.bike.
Is that for tune-ups as well?
Yeah, any labor, any service. So, if you book online, you just knock 20% right off. I'll knock 20% off for you.
How much do tune-ups run?
They start at $39.
I'm going to schedule one online.
Yeah, you should.
Because that's why my bike is here.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Now it's going to be really needing one because it's been here for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you, it's called job security right there.
When you need some grocery money.
So, yeah, I'm starving. I'm wasting away here. Schedule your tune-up online, eauclair.bike, and I'll make sure your next ride is your best ride yet.
I was going to make a joke because you were posting on your page like these, what's the name of the video game bike trainer thing you do?
Zwift.
Yeah, I was going to say, this guy can teach you how to do a video game.
I sure can, because I'm also a level 2 licensed coach with USA Cycling. I'm also a National Interscholastic Cycling Association coach. In fact, our first practice for the youth, Eau Claire Youth Cycling is coming up this week.
Oh, you're doing it?
Yeah, I'm a coach.
For youth cycling?
Eau Claire Youth Cycling,
yep. Oh, you just love those kids.
I'm going to be coaching middle schoolers. So I'm pretty excited. I think it's going to be a really good time.
Well, if they want to do bike stuff, I'm sure it's tolerable. Like, I can't imagine you with, like, 10-year-olds.
Why?
I don't know.
I mean, they're just like, you know, they're just like little humans.
You have really matured.
I mean, they're just like little humans that, like, aren't allowed to drive cars yet.
Right. Or, like, make really good decisions.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of adults like that, too.
I've got to tell you, that's true enough. I got to tell you, do you know about the naked guy situation before we start?
Well, I guess I should have you clarify which naked guy situation.
The naked guy that was in our apartment building?
No. I hope you never move out of that place.
I know.
I want you to never move out.
Well, these people have all moved out now. The people above us who had the meth lab that, like, didn't get kicked out for that weren't paying their rent and eventually got kicked out. They got a German Shepherd puppy, like, a month before they had to leave. And she was posting all this crap on Facebook, the girl who was living up above us, about, like, oh, her landlord, she hasn't been paying the rent for 4 months, and now they want to kick us out, and that's not right, and all this stuff. It's like, well, but, like...
That's, like, the one thing that you kind of got to do.
Yeah. And so my neighbor, who's, like, a detective, would be like, did you see this girl's posting all this stuff? So we had known they were getting kicked out.
Like an amateur detective?
Yeah.
Or she was just like...
Like Facebook.
She's
looking.
Like the neighbor. So she's a snoop.
Well, we kind of had to become that because we couldn't figure out what was going on. And so we realized that they were getting kicked out. So logically, if you can't pay your rent, you should absolutely get a German Shepherd puppy.
Well, I mean, I can see. So the logic there is... you've got your business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is your pharmaceutical production. And,
but they don't have that anymore. And, the guy that was doing that got arrested. So they were just providing the space, I think. I don't know what they do for jobs themselves. The guy doesn't do anything. She would, like, sometimes leave. So they don't have a business.
All right. See, because I was going to launch off in this whole narrative about you know, needing the dog for security purposes.
Yeah, no.
And they're going to need the business to pay the rent, and they got, you know, you need a little cash flow and you know, build up your clientele and you know, make sure you don't get robbed.
Yeah, but none of that's the case. They were just like, oh, we want a puppy, and they're not supposed to have it anyway. And then they got this German Shepherd puppy, which they never took outside to go to the bathroom. Or walk it.
Yeah, and okay, that's a circumstance where maybe those people in that circumstance shouldn't have a dog.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing they have a baby.
It's... Well, you know, baby human, baby dog, you know,
Yeah. So they're friends to these other people who became problems out of nowhere. There was another couple with a kid that were living up above where my friend Pam lives, right? And I thought they were fine. I didn't realize they were friends with the losers above me. Well, that was disheartening when they started talking to each other. It's like, oh, shit. And these people have been living here for a long time, like a year, this other couple. So one day, Pam messages me right before her kid's going to go to school. And this was in May. And like right before I was done with school. And she's like, there's a cat, a kitten, just wandering around over here in the halls. And I don't know what to do with it. And we had suspected that this couple with the kid over on her side had a cat. And I'm like, oh, shit, it must be their cat. It got out. So I'm like, well, put it in a cat carrier and we'll call the landlord. So I go over there to help her.
Oh, I thought you could just like duct tape it to the door.
Is this yours?
Yeah. No, just like a, you know, just like a note. Just like, you know, just stick it to the door. It'll be fine. What? You're looking at me like you've never duct taped a cat to a door before.
What if I said a puppy?
Well, that's not going to work with a puppy.
Right. They're too wiggly.
Yeah. Cat'll just like accept its fate.
I just sleep.
Yeah. Just make sure you feed it first. Yeah. You know, put it in like a little food coma.
Yeah.
Stick it right to the door. It'll be fine.
So we're putting it in the cat carrier, and this other neighbor came out, and she's like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, we just found this cat. Well, as we're standing here contemplating this, this naked guy comes... And out from the basement and comes and sticks his head up the stairs. First, he opened the door and shut it, and we thought it was maintenance. So this other girl yells, is that maintenance? And, like, he doesn't say anything. So we're like, what the hell? So then he comes up again and starts walking up the stairs. And all of a sudden, I see this naked black guy coming up the stairs. And he's like, I got a problem. And there's kids out there now because they're all going to be getting ready for school. And Pam's like makes her kid go in the house. And this other woman like puts her kid in the house. And I'm just going to leave right now. And so he goes up the stairs to the apartment of this people we had never suspected as being a problem. Just opens the door and goes inside. And so she follows him up there. This other girl is like one of those, I get whatever I want. If you don't give me my meal the right way, I'm going to get not only a free meal, but five more free meals. You know, she's just very demanding. So she goes up there and like knocks on the door and she's like, who are you? You don't live there. And which is quite ballsy. And so she calls the cops and we saw the police report. He like was... It seemed to be on meth. They didn't find any on him. But like,
where would it have been?
Right. But he was like seeing stuff on him. He wouldn't put clothes on. So the ambulance came. There were three fire trucks at our place. Like all he had was a sheet on him when they took him out. You haven't even heard the best part of it. Well, he left like a burner on. He was living in the basement because he and his mother, who... His sister is the tenant. His mother got evicted, we discovered, through some sleuthing. and they were living with her and they didn't have enough room for everybody. So he was in the basement in the storage unit, which if you're thinking, hasn't there been people living in storage unit before at our place? Yes, there was with the other apartment. The friends had a similar issue. So because we could see all the stuff down there and you could hear him yelling as he was leaving, I need my stuff. My niece, I forget how they're all
it's
related.
Like, were you gonna put it in your pockets or?
Well, and like he wouldn't put clothes on. So then it's like, what do you care about your, so he's somehow related to all these. I forget how the connection is. It might be it's his niece that lives up there or sister or whatever. So we have to, the girl who called the police had to write a report and she writes like she's in sixth grade. So it was just like this idiotic. Pam and I read it and we're like, oh my God. He was naked. I yelled. He said he had a problem. I mean, it was like, and it just in her writing, it was just freaking painful and it wasn't even completely accurate or anything. So we were like, well, this is interesting. So the landlord's going to have to find out about this. Anyway, I'm out later that day, right? I'm just come outside and Pam's coming, just happens to be got her kid from school and they were walking my way. And there's a guy that rounds the corner wearing odd clothing and hospital booties with discharge papers out of his pocket. And it's the naked guy. And he asks me for a cigarette and then goes and tries to get back into the building. So then I got to call the cops. And I'm like, the guy who was naked this morning is back here. He's not supposed to be here. So the cops come and he managed to get into the building. And I made Tyler go downstairs with me before I called the cops. And like, we saw him in the basement and I just like turned and ran really fast. This dude isn't even fazed by it. He's just still going through his stuff. The cops go and find him down there and they're like, you gotta get out of here. So then he comes back again. So the cops had to come again. And so those people got evicted because, you know, all those problems. And then the other people got evicted. But it was like a very exciting month. And like this guy's since he got arrested with us, he like got arrested for beating up homeless people. He got in front of the gas station, that shitty gas station down here by Barstow. You know, is it a Holiday or the, you know, the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I can't remember what it is, but it's the not Quick Trip.
Yeah, it's like the one, it's not down on Madison, it's not way down there, but it's like right by like the corner of where like the Belfry House.
I think it's a direct.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. So he like was beating up homeless people there and all this stuff. But the girl who wrote the report, she was saying for days after, oh, that's the first time I've seen a naked man in 8 years or what.
Oh, jeez.
So anyway, that happened. So it was pretty good.
It's always a highlight when you can mix in a little nudity in your day. Like a little full frontal it goes a long way.
Or somebody going with a boat that doesn't know how to drive on your road. Yeah. Oh my God. They were like just sitting in the middle of the road with a boat on a trailer. Like,
oh, we're recording in my office. And
yeah.
You can actually see my office at not just anybody's Bikes and Books. And you can see there's a building actually right across Dewey Street that... I don't know who exactly owns it, but the Ski Sprites store a lot of their equipment in there. And that's where they have this, the Ski Sprites haunted house is always in that building.
That's right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's so they're probably getting some stuff for the show tonight.
Right. Yeah, so they're, right, yeah, so you see a lot of hot boat action out on this road here. So,
are you going to tell me a story or am I going to tell
you
a story?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a story about molasses. What do you know about molasses?
I like it in cookies.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
takes
right.
It's a long time to pour.
Right.
I feel like there's some, I don't know, I don't want to get into it. It feels like there's some bad history, a racial history with molasses.
Well, I think there was a lot of, I mean, it was a pr- product of a lot of slavery and,
yeah,
you know, things like that. Because there's two different types of molasses. It's
Blackstrap.
Well, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Blackstrap.
Oh, good.
So there's molasses that comes from sugarcane. You know, where basically you take the you harvest the sugar cane, you strip the leaves, you extract the juice, and you kind of like what they do with maple syrup is, you know, you boil it a certain number of times. Blackstrap is what happens when you boil that sugar cane syrup three times.
What and would you prefer to eat?
I think the blackstrap is the stuff that's normally in, like, that most of us are probably more familiar with, you know, like gingerbread cookies and things like that. But blackstrap molasses is that, you know, that thick, viscous, sometimes it's called a C molasses. Like, the first time you boil it, it's A, second time is B, third time is C. It still has a bunch of like vitamin B6 and a bunch of minerals like calcium and magnesium and iron and manganese. One teaspoon of blackstrap molasses provides up to 20% of the recommended daily value of a bunch of those nutrients. It's also a good source of potassium. So it's
skip the banana.
There's
go
a
right for the
right
molasses.
To the molasses. there is a song in 1951 by Danny Kaye and Friends called Blackstrap Molasses.
Danny Kaye.
Yeah.
I think he was an actor.
Yes. Actor, singer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The friends on this song are Jimmy Durante, Jane Wyman, and Groucho Marx. And it's a parody song about all of the health benefits of blackstrap molasses.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's something like the lyrics are something like, you know, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's like the one line is like, makes you live, it'll make you live so long you wish you were dead.
I think Danny Kaye was in, was he a Bing, did he pal around Bing Crosby?
It seems like
he was in The White Christmas.
Oh, that could be, yeah. So the other kind of molasses comes from sugar beets. And sugar beets deriving the sugar from a different source just gives it, you know, some kind of different properties. That's the stuff that's used in, it is used in some cooking and stuff, but it's more harvested for like its chemical properties.
There was a sugar beet factory in Chippewa Falls.
Yeah. Is it not there anymore?
No, it's there's that Wayside Park when you come from the bypass into Chippewa, like past where that Praxair used to be and like the Irvine Ghost Pub.
I just really feel terrible for all of the people who listen to the show that have no idea,
you know,
where Chippewa Falls is.
Yeah, it's like a town. Chippewa's
you know where that old Praxair was by the old Miller Barn.
Well, anyway, there was a sugar beet factory, and there's just a historical marker. You could Google sugar beets, Chippewa Falls, and you could see where you'd find the historical marker if you're into those.
So here are some uses, some common uses for the different types of molasses. You know, like there's, it's used in a lot of rye breads, cookies, like gingerbread cookies, some pies, barbecue sauce, beers such as stouts and porters use molasses. It's also the principal ingredient in rum.
Wow.
So
I like rum.
Yeah. It's also You can blend it with magnesium and use it for or magnesium chloride and use it for de-icing. It's also a key component for ethanol fermentation.
Glue? Can you use it for glue?
You can. It's actually it's a minor component in mortar for laying bricks. And mixed with gelatin glue and glycerin, you can it turns into that the rubber stuff on ink rollers.
Oh yeah.
So all sorts of stuff that molasses goes into, and so you can imagine in the early 1900s.
Okay.
It's a little more recent. No, but now in the late 1800s, it was
probably like in snake oil stuff, right?
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, most of that stuff was like booze and cocaine.
Oh,
you know, it's like try Uncle Al's Miracle Tonic; it'll make you feel great. It's like, yeah, it gets you high as fuck, you know? Like, yeah, of course it makes. It's a bunch of, it's like whiskey and Coke, you know?
Like for real Coke.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Not like my son.
Right. Well, that's Jack and Coke. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, it will just like numb all of the bad stuff and make you feel great. You know?
Yeah.
Like, so that's what a lot of those tonics were. But a lot of them probably use molasses for color or flavor or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? Because it was a source for ethanol, there was a company called Purity Distilling in Boston. And they would take it and create you know, they were creating ethanol and around you know, World War I, they were starting to distill it into things that like a type of ethanol that could be used in munitions manufacturing, like explosives manufacturing, mm-hmm. you know. So so they had all these like giant storage containers just full of molasses. Now in January they started seeing some temperature fluctuations in, you know, in the weather. You know, sometimes on the coast you get like you know, the air currents, like out, especially like out east, you'll have like one day where it's just like, you know, super crazy freezing, and then you know, like the jet stream will just change a little bit and bring like a you know, warmer mm-hmm. air, and you know, so it's really kind of crazy, like the swing in temperature sometimes. And so so they had a day where it was super cold, and then all of a sudden this warm air comes, and
did this fuck with the molasses?
It got up to about 40 degrees Fahrenheit on January 15th, 1919. And people started reporting, like people were reporting a sound like a train passing. Other people described it as a deep growling or a tremendous crashing. One person described it as a quote thunderclap like bang. And others reported hearing a machine gun-like sound. Now, molasses is about 40% more dense than water. So, you know, it's heavy, it's thick. Now, and this is not the type C stuff like you're, mm-hmm. you know, like used to pouring out of the mm-hmm. the Brer Rabbit bottle.
Yes.
You know? It's, you know, this is stuff that's, you know, it's not.
You could probably drown somebody. You could push somebody in there and they couldn't get out. Big vat of it.
We'll get there. So.
Oh, boy. Okay. The dogs are even excited.
So what happened is the molasses tank was pretty full, and the temperature warms and it expands. The machine gun like sound were the rivets being blown out of the side of the tank.
Oh shit.
And the tank collapses and a giant wave of molasses takes the streets of Boston. Belcheski, stop boxing.
Okay. Yeah. Dog just boxing the shit out of me. I'm trying to be cool while you're talking.
She was really getting handsy there.
Yeah.
So a giant wave of molasses.
Oh no.
Flows out of the tank.
This is just what my imagination was hoping.
25 feet high at its peak, moving 35 miles an hour.
Oh no.
So it drove the panels of the tank into the elevated train, like the pylons of the L, and just collapsed a whole section of the train track. It tipped a streetcar off the tracks. And nearby buildings were swept off their foundations and crushed.
Oh, my God.
Several blocks of Boston were flooded to a depth of 2 to 3 feet of molasses.
Of all the disgusting things. You know, like, this isn't just water.
No. Yeah, this is like a thick syrup, you know.
You're going to be washing stuff for a while.
According to the Boston Post, quote, molasses waist deep covered the street and swirled and bubbled about the wreckage. Here and there struggled a form, whether it was animal or human being was impossible to tell. Only an upheaval, a thrashing about, and the sticky mass showed where any life was. Horses died like so many flies on sticky flypaper. The more they struggled, the deeper in the mess they were ensnared. Human beings, men and women, suffered likewise. There was a truck that was picked up and thrown into the Boston Harbor. And a bunch of people were thrown into the harbor as well. And I've got it in my notes here somewhere, but like. There were people like washing ashore like 3 weeks later.
Oh my God.
So about 150 people were injured. 21 people and several horses were killed.
Well, that part we're okay with.
The horses?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, of course, nowadays we would all be okay with horses dying, but back then, you know,
they
that would be like,
them.
Yeah, that was like your, that would be like if your car got flooded with molasses, like, oh man,
okay.
that's just a day ruiner. So coughing fits became one of the most common ailments after the flood. I don't know, like, exactly what that would. You know, like, if people were, like, aspirating. You
yeah,
know,
I
like,
bet, like, molasses was, like, molasses lung.
I got that molasses lung.
Just sticky in there, and then you just suffocate on your own molasses stuff.
So another account, actually, this one was pulled from the Smithsonian. Anthony DeStaso was walking home with his sisters from Michelangelo School and was picked up by the wave and carried, tumbling on its crest almost as though he were surfing. Then he grounded and the molasses rolled him like a pebble as the wave diminished. He heard his mother call his name and couldn't answer. His throat was so clogged with the smothering goo, he passed out, then opened his eyes to find three of his four sisters staring at him.
Oh my God.
So just like being rolled around by a wave of sugar water. So the problem again was sort of exacerbated by the fact that the next day it got cold again.
Oh, no.
So now you have all this liquid molasses all over, you know, like blocks worth of Boston, and then it gets cold and freezes. They brought in a ship called the USS Nantucket, which was used by the Massachusetts Nautical School, and had 116 cadets, and they used a pump with salt water to like try to hose everything off. So as they're like trying to pull out survivors, the Boston Police, the Red Cross, the Army, and the Navy were trying to like wade in through like waist deep molasses to pull people out. And they were trying to keep them warm, and people worked through the night, and they set up a makeshift hospital in a nearby building, and it took them 4 days before they decided to just stop searching for survivors. And they said many of the dead were so glazed over in molasses that they were hard to recognize.
Oh.
So local residents decided to sue the United States Industrial Alcohol Company, which was the parent company of Purity Distilling. It was actually one of the first class action suits filed in Massachusetts, and a lot of people consider it a milestone in creating kind of the road to modern corporate regulation. But the company was like, no, it wasn't. No, it's like we were being responsible. Our tank was blown up by anarchists because you know, a lot of the alcohol that was being produced was for making bombs, so they're like, no, the anarchists were like trying to fuck with us. But an auditor that was appointed by the court didn't find any evidence of an anarchist attack. And the company ultimately ended up paying out $628,000 worth of damages, which, if you adjust for inflation, is about a little over $9 million.
Whoa.
Relatives of the people who were killed received about $7,000 for their loved one, equivalent to about $100,000. Just in case you wonder what a human life is worth.
Yeah, I was.
And I just want to say that I made it through a whole story about Boston without once saying lobster.
And Boston is, like, ripe with 1800s shit, and you managed to largely avoid it.
Yeah.
So.
1919.
What's the, does this have, like, the name, like, the Molasses Massacre?
So there's a couple of names for it. There's the Great Molasses Flood, the Boston Molasses Disaster, or my personal favorite, the Boston Molassacre.
That's pretty good. At first, I thought you were just going to tell me about molasses, like all the good things about it. And I was like, I mean, this is all right. But
You can cook with it. Yeah, you can make booze.
Yeah, no, I'm ready to record today. Molasses.
Yeah, I got a good one. Yeah. I got a good one. I like cookies.
Well, all right. You heard of the... You want me to tell you something
weird?
Yeah,
tell me something weird. Tell me about some dead person.
Have you heard of the bystander effect?
Yes. Yes, I have. I think I know what you're going to talk about. Okay. Awesome. Cool.
The bystander effect is the effect of people witnessing something and not doing anything.
Right, because it's as I understand it, the bystander effect is something along the lines of like... say, well, I don't need to call it in because, like, look at all these other people around here. Somebody else will do it. Somebody else probably already has done it.
Yes, exactly.
And so everybody thinks that, and so nobody actually, like, reports the incident or calls the cops or calls an ambulance or...
Yes. Yeah. So there's a famous murder of a woman from New York called Kitty Genovese. Now, what's interesting about this story is that the bystander effect is somewhat misrepresented. Her brother did a... How I came to find this story is I was watching documentaries on Netflix, and there's one called The Witness from 2015, and it's the brother of her going to interview people from that apartment building and talking about what happened. So let's first get back to what exactly happened. So Kitty... Catherine Genovese was this gal who lived in New York with her girlfriend. And this would have been 1964 is when this event occurred on March 13th.
I thought it was earlier than that.
Yeah, no, this is maybe you're thinking of a different one. She was working as a bartender in Hollis, Queens. And she and her girlfriend shared a Kew Gardens apartment on Austin Street. Her girlfriend's name was Mary. And a girlfriend, which of course all the neighbors just thought they were, you know, all those two girls living together, you know.
Oh, they're roommates.
Yes. Roommate syndrome. That's something else.
Yeah.
So you might be thinking of a different one.
I think those girls might be Lebanese.
You're talking like my, what I'd like to be the ray of sunshine if you don't have one.
I do have one. Maybe we should, since it's been so long, we should both have
yes.
one.
Yes. Because you're talking like it's something from my ray of sunshine. So, anyway, Kitty, how old was she? Well, she was born in 1935. Oh, she was 28 when she died. Okay, so Kitty is a bartender. She leaves work around 2:30 in the morning on March 13th, 1964, and she's driving a red Fiat, which I like. And she's sitting at a traffic light.
Was it a panda?
Oh, my God, this dog. Like, as long as you're just cool.
Yeah,
just be cool.
Don't make it weird.
Yeah, don't make it. Oh, she almost stepped on Merle's head. He seems clearly worried.
Yeah. That's so awesome.
He's just laying there like a lump.
Yep.
So there's this guy named Winston Mosley, and he spots her while she's waiting at a stoplight, right? He's sitting in a parked car. So she gets home around 3:15 and she parks her car at a parking lot that's about 100 feet from her apartment door. All right. It's in an alleyway at the rear of the building. So she's walking towards her apartment complex. It's super early in the morning. This guy followed her home, got out of his vehicle, which he had parked at a corner, and comes at her with a hunting knife. And she ran toward the front of the building when she hears footsteps behind her.
I thought you said honey knife.
Honey knife.
Like,
hunting.
My brain was trying to put together like what that would look like.
It's for like that thick honey.
And I know.
For Biddle honeys.
I know like the thing, you know, like that you dip into the jar.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. They're always usually look like a little honeycomb.
What? No, it's like. Got like lined, like it's got like grooves in it. It's like it's
yeah,
like a
it's
spoon
meant to
that
look,
goes on.
Yeah, it's meant to look like a little bee's nest. I mean,
yeah, right. And so yeah, you stick that in the jar, and I still don't really understand exactly what the purpose of that thing is.
Because that just makes it hard. Because then it's dripping everywhere.
Right.
Like just get the squeeze bottle bear.
Yeah, get the bear shaped bottle with the nozzle at the top, and then you just squeeze that right into your mouth. Right? That's how honey works. So I don't know where the knife comes in. That's what I was having trouble with. Okay. It's where the knife comes into that equation.
Hunting knife.
Hunting.
So this is a really awful. I mean, it's not awful in some, like, in the some ways some of my others have been. So she starts running. He overtakes her and he stabs her twice in the back. She screams, "Oh my God, he stabbed me. Help me." Several neighbors heard her cry, but only a few of them recognized the sound as a cry of help. When Robert Moser, one of the neighbors, shouted at the attacker, "Let that girl alone!" This dude ran away. Still, nobody is understanding what's going on, and it's like one of those apartment quads where, you know, there would be a whole bunch of people. She slowly makes her way to the rear entrance of the building, seriously injured, and now she's out of the view. She eventually gets out of the view of any witnesses because she has to go around because she had been running. So she gets back to her door. So these people were watching enough to see this guy get in his car and leave, and they're like, okay.
Everything's fine.
Yeah. He was trying to attack her, and it's fine. He comes back 10 minutes later. This is my fucking worst nightmare. This is one of my worst nightmares. He puts a hat on. He systematically searches the parking lot, the train station, apartment complex, eventually finding Kitty, barely conscious, and lying in a hallway at the back of the building where a locked door kept her from going inside to get to her apartment. Out of the view of the street and anybody who had seen the initial attack, he stabs her several more times before raping her, taking $49 from her and running away. The attacks, plural, spanned half an hour, and knife wounds in her hands suggested she attempted to defend herself. And there was a neighbor who found her shortly after that and held her in her arms while she died. All right. So can you imagine being this woman? You get attacked. You are just fucking hurt as fuck. And you're like, oh my God, I might survive this. I've just got to crawl and get to my door. Oh shit, it's locked. How am I going to be able to stand up to unlock this? And here he comes again. Oh my God. Oh, I just. So.
That's some determination and some, like, real balls.
Yeah.
You know, like. To be so I gotta finish this job.
Yes, I'm gonna come back and find her.
And to like search around.
And then
He did have a clever disguise though.
Yeah, a wide brim hat.
Yeah,
and like, so there was no 911 system at the time.
That's crazy to think about in the 60s, you know, like, I mean,
yeah,
I guess it makes sense, you know, kind of like in context. Do you know when the 911 system?
Well, this was one of the cases that skyrockets or gets
the
ball rolling on that as
well. Because it's like, it just seems like in the 60s that would have already been a thing.
Yeah.
But. You know, kind of putting it in the context of where like technology was and stuff, I guess it sort of makes sense, but
right.
Yeah.
So records of the earliest calls to police are unclear and weren't given high priority. Oh, the incident occurred 4 years before New York implemented 911. So they would have had it in 1968. Now I bet it was big towns first.
Sure.
That did stuff like that.
Yep.
One witness said his father called the police after the initial attack and reported that a woman was, quote, beat up, but got up and was staggering around. A few minutes after the final attack, another witness called the cops who arrived at the scene within minutes of his call. They got her in an ambulance and she died en route. So this case happens, right? And it's like big deal, but it's not like front page headlines. It's just like a woman was stabbed, you know. But what happened was, 2 weeks after the murder, the New York Times publishes an article claiming that 38 witnesses saw or heard an attack, but none of them called the police or came to her aid.
Right. Yes, that's the story I'm familiar with.
Yes, and so they call it the Genovese syndrome or bystander effect. It became a staple in psych textbooks for the next four decades. What's the problem is that there have been some inconsistencies found with this article, which had all of these 38 witnesses. Nobody did anything. And of course, you know, everyone was like, well, this is fucking terrible, you know. So we don't really need to worry about what happened to the guy. He got caught. He was caught stealing, burglary, like 2 weeks later, and he confessed to the murder. And so he was life imprisonment and served 52 years of his sentence. He died in 2016 at the age of 81. So he was in prison for that whole time. But yeah, he got caught like with a stolen TV or something. And somehow, I don't know if he freaked out and thought that they knew something else about him, but he confessed to this murder.
And, you know, I just sort of imagine that, like, you know, he's sitting in the, you know, the, like one of those interrogation rooms, and you know, you got they're playing like some good cop, bad cop on him, you know, like the bad cop is like yelling at him about the TV and stuff, and then the good cop comes in, gives him a cup of coffee, and is like, hey man, you can tell me anything, we're buddies here.
He's like,
no, that's cool. Like I killed a chick once.
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's like crazy.
And I'm sure then they're like tiptoe out of the room. Yeah. I think we need, like, we're just the beat cops or whatever, you know, we need the big guns in here. So, all right. What was his name? There's a police commissioner, Michael Murphy. He's the one who says to the New York Times that Queen's story is one for the books because they wanted the Times to do an investigative report on it. And so they claimed... Oh, here's what's great. They claim 38 witnesses saw the murder, but an error reduced the number of witnesses in the headline to 37. The headline said 37 who saw murder didn't call police. You know, there was quotes. There was a supposed quote of somebody saying to the police, I didn't want to get involved. And so this also has to do with that effect of like when you... like see a train wreck or, you know, you see something and you're like, well, I'm sorry for that person, but I'm not going to help them, but I'm sorry that's happening to them. But like, I don't want to get involved. Or like, if you see something at a store, like somebody hitting their kid or something, you're just like, well, I don't want any part of that, you know? That's kind of what, you know, has that, what is what has all occurred. Okay. And so this became a really awful thing and people were really pissed off about it. And so the New York Times, well, and the other part was, is back when this was written, there was another reporter who knew that this wasn't correct and he was too afraid to report it because the New York Times was so powerful.
He got bystander syndrome. Yeah. On a story about bystander syndrome.
Yeah, he had bystander syndrome. He was like...
it's like, no, this isn't... Something weird's happening here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get involved.
Yeah, like, I don't think that guy's got it right. There's this science fiction author. Do you know Harlan Ellison? He wrote an article in 1988 for the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. It was later reprinted in a book called Harlan Ellison's Watching. He calls the murder... as witnessed by 38 neighbors, not one of them who made the slightest effort to save her, to scream at the killer, or even to call the police. So this case has been embraced for a long time as one of these cases where, holy shit, people have no heart and didn't want to do anything. Well, all of a sudden, somebody from the New York Times in 2004 publishes an article on the 40th anniversary of her murder, and he starts to raise all these claims. There was a study done that found that many of the facts about the murder were not founded, stating there was no evidence for the presence of 38 witnesses or that witnesses observed the murder or that they remained inactive. So then after this guy's death, the guy who was the murderer after he died in 2016, The New York Times comes out and says, well, there was a question that the attack occurred and that some neighbors ignored cries for help. The portrayal of 38 witnesses as fully aware and unresponsive was erroneous. The article grossly exaggerated the number
of witnesses.
It's fake news. Yeah.
It's fake news.
None of them saw the attack in its entirety.
This is reported by CNN.
Only a few had glimpsed parts of it or recognized a cry for help. Many thought they heard lovers or drunks quarreling. There were two attacks, not three, the first and the follow. And afterward, two people did call the police. A 70-year-old woman ventured out and cradled the dying victim in her arms until they arrived. Ms. Genovese died on the way to the hospital. Nobody saw the whole incident. There was approximately a dozen individuals who had seen parts of the attack. None had seen or were aware of the entire incident. Only one witness, Joseph Fink, was aware she was stabbed in the first attack. And only Carl Ross, another witness, was aware of the second attack. Many were entirely unaware that an assault or homicide had taken place. Some thought they had seen or heard a domestic quarrel. All right. So these people have been fucking pissed because this thing occurred. And, you know, how many times have I heard, like, over the course of living in various places and apartments and whatever, just like loud noises. And you're like, I don't know if that's a problem that I'm supposed to be worried about or if that's a problem that I need to call the cops on.
Right. And not everybody lives in a place with a clear pattern of weird stuff happening, like,
right,
in your apartment
yes.
complex. You know,
these, like, are a bunch of elderly people.
Because if you heard some yelling and whatever outside of your apartment, mm-hmm. like, for sure, now you're kind of, because you're kind of on edge now, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes.
And, you know, I've never lived in New York, but I did live in, I've lived in a couple of, like, cities over the years. And, like, when you're living in, like in that kind of proximity around other humans, like, you know, like, there's a lot of noise that happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially at night, you know, you've got it, like, somebody's got to be awake. Somebody's got to be, like, mm-hmm. like, close enough to their window, you know, to be able to catch all that. So, like, there's, you know, this whole, like, set of conditions that need to be satisfied, you know, in order for this story, as it was reported, to have happened.
Right.
You know, and, like, none of those conditions existed in a full enough form for that story to be accurate.
Yeah, you know? And this was 3:15 in the morning.
Right.
And there's always been drunk people in big cities early in the morning stumbling around. It happens here, you know?
Yeah.
There'll be people shouting and getting into fights or, you know, and like back then a lover's quarrel, you know, like...
Because we have completely eliminated the,
right.
the problem of the lover's quarrel.
Yeah, or maybe perhaps the reaction to it might be different now. Like, hey, somebody, you know, in the 60s, I don't know, you see some guy like appear to shove a woman and you'd be like, oh, those two are just having an argument. You know, they'll get over it or whatever. Like, I'm sure that was not an uncommon response, right?
I gotta think, yeah.
I mean, you know, and
right,
so.
Like, well, I'm not gonna get involved in that.
Right.
Well, which I think is, I mean, that is just sort of our default position.
Yeah, and it's
for
part of
people.
It's like, kind of like you just don't know. And then also out of fear, like you don't want to insert yourself into something where you might potentially get harmed, you know, or whatever. And so these people were mad, though, because they've all been portrayed as all these people who didn't want to do shit. And also those witnesses, they like would talk to more than one person in a like one apartment, and you know, really it was like they all heard the same things, they're all living there, but it's not like they made it sound like it was like 40 different apartments, you know, but really there were not that many apartments, and there was some had like three people living in them, so it's not like 40 separate, you know, residences or anything like that. So Kitty's brother William discovers that other crime reporters knew of many problems, even with the story in 1964, like we were saying, the bystander effect, which I had not thought of till you pointed that out. So he decides to make a documentary, which is really good, called The Witness. Immediately after the story broke, there was a police reporter, the initial story broke, there was somebody from WNBC who had found all these inconsistencies. He actually asked the New York Times reporter, why his article failed to reveal that witnesses did not feel a murder was happening. That New York Times reporter had told him it would have ruined the story. And so not wishing to jeopardize his career by attacking the powerful New York Times editor, Abe Rosenthal, this guy from WNBC kept his findings secrets. So,
well, and I think we can all agree that what's most important in news coverage is the story being compelling.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, yes. we just need a compelling narrative. We don't, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's really how it happened. We just need something to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, think of the newspaper people. They got to eat. And if the stories aren't interesting,
mm-hmm.
Then they eat less. So.
Well, and this really got nuts. Because that guy, his name was Danny Meehan, who had found these inconsistencies. So he passed them on to another reporter named Gabe Pressman at WNBC. And Pressman later taught a journalism course in which some of his students called Abe Rosenthal from the New York Times and confronted him with this evidence that they must have learned over time. Hey, our teacher has these notes from this old case. And this guy was pissed that his editorial decisions were being questioned by journalism students, and he called the student a phone call. And then that's when they had to talk about this erroneous report.
Hey, guys, did you read the story? Did you read it? Like, it was good, right? It was really good. And, I was, super hungry.
Yeah.
Like,
it was a rough time.
Yeah, well,
you know, the civil rights were happening and everything else, but this was a murder that was not even a big deal on their radar for 2 weeks. You know? Like, Jesus Christ. And so, yes, when the murderer died, they reran the original story and then had this thing I had read to you about the problems with the account. So it was on account of this murder that this 911 system in New York City, that was one of the reasons why, you know. And what's nuts is that it's literally in every introduction to psychology textbook. There was 8 out of 10 psychology textbooks had this murder in it. The Genovese effect, the bystander effect, as an example. That's how grossly, how they created something that wasn't exactly true and it fucking went off the rails. And it was all these psychology textbooks have ran with it. Papers and media outlets ran with the story, and nearly a dozen books. And what came to Phil mentioned, there was a James Solomon. Oh, okay. That's the witness. But there are so many things that came as a result of this, Perry Mason, Law and Order, Histories, Mysteries. There's this in
Unsolved Mystery. I know.
Unsolved Mysteries. You know, all these people wrote these books, the Watchmen comic series. I mean, everybody, when they talk about this, talk about it incorrectly, you know, and hang on to this thing, this young woman, everybody watched, you know, and you know, how we're horrible people and all this stuff is, you know, as using this case and not being correct. So I had come about it the other way. The first thing I knew about it was the witness, which her brother did. And he goes and interviews the neighbors that are still living. And because a lot of people in New York City stay in those same apartments because they're rent controlled. And so there's a lot of the same people still living in that building from the initial thing and talking about the real account. And also a lot of people did call the police, but it wasn't in the 911 system. And
right, because they had to dial the 1 and the area code and the country code.
And either it was busy or they said they heard something and then nothing was done with it, you know. So, he talked to several people who were I did call the police. and like the calls were just like, if you were to, can you imagine the 60s with no 911 and there's just somebody working at a desk and picks it up. I'm heard screaming in this borough or whatever. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, okay. Anyway, just put that aside. And it didn't even get documented, you know? So that's the story of Kitty Genovese and the bystander effect, and how one case, thanks to the New York Times, largely.
Well, and that actually, yeah, I mean, right. It's interesting. It's a story that I think is more interesting, because of how it was covered.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that, you know, like, this idea of a bystander effect, you know, may have some merit. You know, I think there is some merit to it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things that, like, feels right.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
But it also, if I can find a way to distill it down to like 20 minutes or so, the two things that I would love to be able to talk about on this show are how textbooks are approved, like the process of how textbooks are put together and approved. That's a really interesting thing. You know, like mm-hmm. we're taught all of these things, and it's like there's this whole like political and bureaucratic process that decides what, you know, what
right.
people are taught in schools. You know, and the when you talk about like the witness accounts, and people talking about how they call the police or how they remember calling the police, there are like, you can actually manufacture memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just taking this, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but there is an effect where like you, so maybe a person, was there and didn't call the police, right? But somebody called the police, and they remember the police being there, and then they, you know, hear all these stories, you know, and over the years,
mm-hmm.
They start to think like, well, maybe I called the police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I don't remember calling the police. Huh? Maybe, you know, like, you know,
right.
And then it morphs, and you actually can manufacture a real memory that you remember picking up the phone, calling the police. Making that report, and it never happened.
And that becomes the reality.
It becomes your reality.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes as real as any memory in your head. And I'm not, like I say, I'm not saying that that applies to this.
Yeah.
Any of these particular people, but it's something that, that could happen,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so like the, how our brains make memories, I think would be an interesting story
yeah,
to talk about,
yes.
you know? So
yeah.
it's just a matter of like being able to like put all that information together and, and distill it
no
down
kidding.
Into a,
yeah. But those are really good ones.
Yeah.
And how they found that guy with the TV is he was driving a Corvair, a white car, which had somebody had reported, one of the witnesses, the people that they had talked to had remembered seeing a white car. And so anyway, they pulled him over, and he also confessed to killing. He shot and burned a woman to death in her apartment a few weeks before that. And, he had killed a 15-year-old girl in her parents' apartment or in her home the last July. So Winston Mosley was, I guess, a serial killer. When he did this one, and yeah,
was this the one that qualified him?
Yes. It's gotta be, I think three generally, you know. And yeah, he did have sex with her after he killed her, and he that was something that he liked to do, and he had an IQ of 135.
You gotta watch out for the smart, quiet ones.
Yeah. So anyway,
so you don't have to worry about either one of us.
Right. So what's your ray of sunshine?
My ray of sunshine is a series of books that I just discovered, you know, like
Game of Thrones.
No. Game of Thrones is fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I watched it and it's fine.
Yeah. I watched it. It's fine. Yeah. Everybody tells me the books are better. I don't know that I can ever go experience in that way now because mm-hmm. I know too much of the story and I don't know that I would find it interesting anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so, and there's just so much there, you know, it just seems like such a huge commitment. So I did find another series of books and this does not feel like a commitment to me because it's so much of a goddamn delight that I can't wait to get through one and then get to the next one. It's called Space Team.
It sounds spot on.
Yeah, yeah. It's a story of a kind of a charming, roguish, con man type of guy who mistakenly is abducted by a giant galactic corporation and who accidentally kills most of the population of Earth. And he's thrust into these zany space adventures. His best friend is a shape-shifting blob that can't speak, named Splurt. There's a lot of like sci-fi, pop culture Easter eggs in it, you know, and it's as funny, and I don't make this comparison lightly, but it is as funny a book as I've read since Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Wow.
Like it's a world that has like color and depth and the dialogue is great. And it's like genuinely laugh out loud funny. So
Space Team. Wow. Yeah. We're on the third one of those Hitchhikers. We're almost finished.
Oh yeah. Hitchhikers. Is just, it's amazing.
The third one, there is a little bit of like, you so appreciate the encounters and the situations and whatever, but it's like, sometimes you're like, wait a minute, what's actually happening right now?
Right.
You know? Like, okay. So my recommendation is something that's probably going to be tanked before anybody discovers it because now it's gotten taken over. But are you familiar with this Facebook phenomenon of like, let's pretend we're boomers, Facebook groups?
Does this have anything to do with cat's feet?
This has to do with pretending to be baby boomers and people just posting as if they were. And so I have adopted this alter ego of somebody who has a deceased son that I often think when I see a cardinal, it's like my deceased son is saying good morning. And like, I just inappropriately will answer like, you know, like with like the answer will be my deceased son. And like, you'll be like, well, what's that have to do with anything? So there's this group, like, let's pretend to be boomers where all the posts are about people like kind of confused about things. And like, you know how sometimes you'll see, I know you're familiar with family members of a certain generation, like you'll have a post and it'll just be love you Eric and you're like right,
yeah or it's like, hey, that would be better as like a private message.
Yes. Yes, what are you doing on Friday? Like stuff like that, right. You know, all in caps. So it's just these people that just have
just not understanding how like social media works.
Yeah,
not quite getting it.
Yes,
being able to function its like use its functionality, but not understand like the subtext,
right?
Like the kind of the social cues.
So that's a group that if you like the first day Tyler and I were in it, we. Now, some people are just like not being quite, it just is like anything. Some people really tapped into how funny it is.
Right.
And some people are just like their posts are disappointing.
Kind of like, have you ever seen Rate My Plate?
No. Oh, like the food pictures?
Yeah. People, right. Yeah. People post pictures of like their.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know exactly how it got started, but it has millions of followers now.
Yeah.
And, people post comments and there are certain. A certain few that really just get the vibe of what
mm-hmm.
you know, what makes it funny.
Yeah.
And then there's some that just like, you know, there's a bunch of people who just like recycle the same jokes that they saw in earlier ones.
Yes, that's what some of these people do,
you
know, too.
And it's like, you know, thanks for contributing. Right. You know, great. Thanks for being part of the community. But, you know, maybe you're not a comedian.
Right.
You know, not everybody is, but then, I mean, I guess you got to try out your material somewhere. You got to, you know, like, you know, it's a learning process of like trying to figure out like what
yes.
works and what doesn't work.
Right.
And, you know, so you got to throw stuff out there and get mm-hmm. a response and
then you can grow from that.
Right. Right. So, yeah. You know, so so I don't want to discourage that too
but
much.
Yes,
but,
there's a bit of that, but like I had a post daughter house sat for me and threw away my collection of rinsed out bread bags, and now I have to start over.
Okay, that's, yeah, all right, I get it. I get
yeah.
that, yeah, that's,
yeah,
that's
so
a good
like
one. Yeah.
One I wrote, but then some people just do like, you know, what does LGBTQ mean? Like, you'll see it 50 times a day, and you're like, oh, you know, like, yeah, yeah. So, like, I'm more developing this weird persona. Some of these people are, you know, so you will get, like, laughs like that, and then you'll be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
so that's
right,
my
right.
that's my ray of sunshine.
All right. And it's called
the Let's Pretend to Be Boomers.
Let's Pretend to Be Boomers. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That is two solid rays of sunshine.
They are.
Make you laugh. Make
yeah.
you smile.
Why don't you have a weird week?